Blog Talk Radio.
Now, before we get everything started, I've got to say this. This is Dr. John. One of our co-hosts called me up after a show one time and said, I think I said everything wrong. And I said, you're right, but we're going to keep you anyway. You're too funny. We will discuss who that is later on. This is Dr. John, and this is Pop Culture Stars. I'm so glad to be here. We got a live and healthy and happy and excited crew here tonight. So let me get going. I'm going to start out with our co-hosts in the order in which they called in, because Todd has never been on time. He has always only been early. Todd Saxon, how are you doing from Studio I in Indianapolis?
I am doing outstanding to supernatural and out freaking static to be here. It has been just insane the last 2 weeks, but you know what? The weather's beautiful.
What?
I still got plenty of sunshine outside, and things are going great. I just hope everybody's doing well.
Well, I think we're going to find out everybody's doing pretty good. I'm kind of back to work now. It feels good. I've got a conference coming up Friday. I'll tell everybody that here in just about that a minute. Now, the one and only, the Sergeant Major's son, the guy that will be having a cigar from Godfather's and something else while we enjoy this wonderful, wonderful night of fun fellowship and who knows whatever else. Dave Atwell, how you doing tonight, Dave?
Hey, I'm doing great. Hope everybody else is. And as you stated, I am indeed enjoying not having a malt beverage tonight with the blue ribbon on it. I'm having an apple crown royal, and had the tasteful one, so I had that. And you know, the cigar, I tell you, if you're ever wanting to break into the cigar business and you want to kind of ease your way into it flavor-wise, Drew Estate puts out a ton. They got some of the best cigars out there. If you ever want to get into the business of smoking cigars, ask for a Drew Estate cigar, because between their Ligas and, I mean, they've just got such good products out there. But there's three of them that have like the Day of the Dead motif on them, and they're called there's a Crazy Alice, a Sweet Jane, and a Fat Bottom Betty. Fat Bottom Betty. And I'm telling you, if there's a cigar
I dated her in high school.
These things are excellent. And you don't get none of that smoky feeling. You know, the first couple pulls, you don't get that smoky. Everything is just as sweet as can be. And I'm telling you, this cigar has started out beyond excellent. And I only wish the damn thing was 30 feet long so I could enjoy it all night. But alas, sooner or later, I'll burn this thing out. But, yeah, good start to the show. Good cigar, good drink, good company, good weather. Let's get it on.
All righty. Now, from somewhere near Richmond, Virginia, our guest tonight, Randy Lawson, professional wrestler at large. Randy, how are you doing tonight?
I'm not doing too bad tonight. Feeling pretty good here. How's everyone else feeling tonight?
Good. Doing good. Right. Good to have you on.
Absolutely. Pleasure to be on.
Yes. Well, we're glad to have you. And guess who has shown up tonight? The one and only Professor Wrestling, Steve. How you doing tonight, Steve?
Good. Glad to be on and to have a guest that I'm familiar with, so should be a good episode.
That's great. Yeah, we're glad to have you here. All right, now, we got to talk just a few minutes, and actually talk about 30 seconds. This Friday and Saturday, my pet project of all time, the 3rd Annual South Carolina Lizard Man Festival. And that will begin at noon on Friday. It will go to lizardmanfestival.com. All the notes on what to do and where to go to hear the Facebook Lives. We start out with Lyle Blackburn. He's got a brand new book called Scary Swamps. I have seen part of it. I have gotten my promotional copy. It's kind of nice to get promotional copies from Lyle Blackburn, but then he gets promotional copies from me. So that's all good. It's going to be great to have Lyle. Then I'm going to be talking about topics from my new book coming out very, very soon called The Lizard Man Companion. Then we have Robin McRae talking about Bigfoot habituating, having Bigfoot all around her house. And that includes me, Dave. That includes me. Because I have a large foot. Okay. And then Janice Carter, the sweet lady from Tennessee, whose family lived with Bigfoot for 55 years. And she's got pictures to prove it. And she's got the book to prove it. She's a nice lady. So we're going to have just a wild and crazy one on Friday afternoon. Saturday afternoon, we've got some more great speakers. So everybody just go to Lizard Man Festival on Facebook, Lizard Man Festival, and you'll find us, and you'll see me posting like mad all day long Friday and Saturday to keep everybody in line so we can hear these great talks. And I'm going to say some bad stuff about some people, so you might want to be there. Blah, how's that? I'm going to say some bad stuff about bad people.
Lawyer.
I'm going to do it, and I don't care what anybody says, even if they want to sue me. I'm right, and they're wrong. All right, Randy, what's up? You're a wrestler. How long have you been wrestling? I got to change the question.
Okay.
Is it wrestling or is it wrestling? What do you call it?
Even though I'm from Virginia, I make sure to enunciate everything. So it's wrestling with E, wrestling. I've been professional wrestling since August 26, 2017. So I'm creeping up on my 3-year mark of being professional. I do have a background in folk style, Greco-Roman freestyle wrestling that I've been doing since 2007. So kind of transitioned from that into professional wrestling. And here I am almost 3 years later doing something I still can't believe I'm doing.
We had a talk about a week ago. It was a great talk because you said something. You said, I had no idea that I could do this and that I would do everything in my power to make it happen. I would miss things. I would work out. I would do everything. But I made sure I was always there and ready to go. You remember telling me that? Said nothing was going to stand in your way. That's right.
Absolutely.
You know, that is how you meet a goal, and that is how you become something in life. And I don't know what I have become, but I still have goals. My compatriots, Dave and Todd and Liz, they have better goal setting than I do probably, but we still enjoy it. But yeah, so it's wrestling. Well, I'm going to call it wrestling. And I'm going to have Brady Hicks on tomorrow night at 11 p.m. on ScaryCast. And I don't care what Brady says about how I pronounce wrestling, because that's all it ever
was.
Hey,
to each their own.
All I ever... Hmm?
I said to each their own. Hey, wrestling. It's tomato, tomato to me.
It's wrestling. It's wrestling. But that's all right. It's wonderful. So you've been going at this on a professional level very close to 3 years. That's really cool. Now, this is something that I wanted to be a wrestler when I was a kid. But, I mean, living in Morganton, North Carolina, we never – I don't think we had a wrestling show in town until I was a junior in high school. We never got to see it locally. The only wrestling I ever got to see was when I just pestered my parents to death, and they would get in the car with me on a Monday night at Monday afternoon at 4:30, and my daddy would drive me down to the Charlotte Park Center, now Grady Cole Center, and we would watch Johnny Weaver and George Becker. We'd watch Ole and Gene Anderson, Lars Anderson, J.C. Dykes and the Infernos. Boy, people hated them. That was our version of the Sheik, the real Sheik, Eddie Farkan from Lansing, Michigan, of all places. Far at. I'm sorry. I just got in, Steve. Come on. Okay, so anyway, that's all I ever got to see, and I never had a chance to break into wrestling. I didn't even know where you even could find a wrestler. How'd you break in?
Well, that's actually it's kind of a funny story. As I tell it, I know at least probably Professor Steve is going to recognize some of the stuff I say because he's actually from – he's close to me in Virginia. And I know he'll know some of the stuff that I'll be bringing up. Basically, not to – I could talk about it all day, but just to kind of keep it long story short, basically I was doing like the folk style, collegiate style wrestling. And I was – after high school, still trying to figure out what I wanted to do. Obviously, back then I wasn't – I don't think that professional wrestling was even in the realm of possibility to me. I had no idea how to even get into that. So I – still did the wrestling in college that I loved. I went to a community college trying to figure things out, and I was doing a lot of college tournaments on my own, which are basically listed as open tournaments. You basically just have to have a license, a USA wrestling card, and you pay for the tournaments and you compete. And so I was doing that a lot, just kind of just out of the love of it, just to keep going. And funny story, I had a guy that I was working at a I also have a love for baseball, but we can talk about that later too. I was working in a baseball pro shop, you know, selling gloves and baseball bats and stuff like that. And a guy came in there and was buying, I think, athletic tape is exactly what he was buying. And just small talk with him. I figured he was playing baseball or softball. So just tried to, you know, small talk with him. And I said, hey, you know, are you playing baseball or having a tournament today? He said, nah, we're wrestling. And I was like, oh, no way. I'm a wrestler, too. That's awesome. Where's it at? Like, if it's, you know, kind of an open thing, let me swing by. And he kind of looked at me a little funny, like, you're a wrestler? I was like, yeah. And so he gave me
You got to be something, don't you?
Yeah. What's that?
I said, you got to be something. May as well be a wrestler.
Well, exactly. But back then, I was just a folk-style amateur wrestler, you know, like in a singlet headgear, ASICS wrestling shoes on a mat. And so he gave me the information. It was at a high school not too far from me. So when I got off work, I actually had my stuff in the car because I had practice the night before. So I got there and get into the gymnasium, and I immediately realized the mistake – well, no longer a mistake. It turned out to be a blessing in disguise. But I realized, like, oh, no, there's a ring here. This isn't – a folk style tournament. There's no mats here. There's a wrestling ring.
Where the mat? And yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, well, let me talk to someone about this. And because it clicked almost immediately. I was like, this might be a way into this into professional wrestling. And basically, the guy gave me some information. Obviously, I was not a trained professional wrestler. There was miscommunication there at that time. And he gave me information to get in touch with some people to get me into training. And at the time, there was a school called GXW that was fantastic. They have a lot of guys that to this day are still wrestling up and down the East Coast, nationally, internationally even. Guys like Timmy Danger, Ethan Cross, Gordon Broswell, Brandon Green. The list goes on, and so many of these guys are still working very consistently and all over the place. And I tried to get in there to train, but unfortunately timing was a little off and they were actually closing. So I didn't get in there to get trained, which I feel like I kind of missed a little bit of a train there, no pun intended. But I missed out on that training with GXW. And it, basically another thing fell into my lap. A guy by the name of Phil Stamper got me in touch with some guys in Maryland named Nick Sicken Taylor and Matt Wild for Riot City, and those guys brought me in, got me trained, and it was about 8 to 9 months after I started training, I had my first match, and I guess you could say the rest is history.
All right, did you win or lose or draw on your first match?
Oh, no, my first match, I got clobbered. It was a guy by the name of Massive Mike, who in the Delaware area has a pretty good notoriety. A lot of you could go to the state of Delaware and that area, you know, Delaware, Pennsylvania, Maryland, East Coast, and most people will know who Massive Mike is. And I was humbled that he actually I went to the show with my trainer, and I wasn't fully sure that I was even going to wrestle that day. And he handpicked me. He said, "I want to see what the kid's got." And I had something, but that night it wasn't enough to get the win. But it was still my first match debut. You know, that first time coming through that curtain and having the crowd you know, all eyes on you. It's just an incredible feeling and something I'll never forget.
That's a great story. That really is. Have you ever noticed how everybody in wrestling wants to get somebody, wants to get someone new into wrestling? It's kind of like the survival motif. If we don't get
yep.
new people in
a little bit of a pay it forward kind of thing, I believe, as well.
Pay it forward,
well,
yeah, they're going to make sure that you'll stick there
sometimes
for a while.
Sometimes there's talent vacuums with WWE signing everybody, so these indies need new people to showcase.
Exactly.
Yep, well, that's cool. All right, Todd, you've seen enough wrestling in your time, haven't you? Not enough.
True, not enough on that side. I tell you what, Randy, you're doing stuff on the East Coast, stuff like that, and I know some of the folks that run through our area and things like that, and I heard Steve spit out his name, Papa Stro, the Maestro of Wrestling, done anything with him?
Actually, one of my first shows, it was another show where I was still very, very early on. I was with my trainers at a show called UCW, which I now work for. I've worked for them a couple times, and it's been fantastic to wrestle for UCW. Like, those guys are
no doubt
truly professional. And Maestro, Stro was on the first show I went to there. And so I met him, you know, kind of as you do. You know, you meet a lot of guys in professional wrestling. You know, you go into a locker room, you shake everyone's hand. So I know I remember that experience, but I was a trainee at the time. You know, I have vividly bright red hair, but I doubt he would probably remember that interaction because he's probably had millions of interactions exactly like what we had. You know, it's just kind of a show of respect. Introduce myself. Very nice to meet you. Pleasure, you know, being at the show with you kind of thing. And but, yeah, he was awesome. So I have not had the pleasure of working a show with him since, but I know he's still all around and doing his thing.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah, there's a handful of guys there working the East Coast. Guys love the one of the guys Stro's feuded with. One of the dudes, so funny, he has had me dying when I'm there at some of the matches, is Mike Mosley.
Okay.
Another guy that's pretty solid is L.A. Tank.
L.A. Tank is actually from, I believe, Petersburg. He's right up the road
yep.
from me. I mean, within 30 minutes. It's funny. Last time I actually met him was at a classic pro wrestling show in, I want to say, King William, Virginia. And he's like, man, why have we never met before? Why, you know, we live so close together. We should be riding shows together. And of course, that was right before, you know, quarantine hit. So hopefully I link up with him and we, you know, can kind of carpool to some shows together soon.
Yeah, hell of a good guy.
You still got his number? You still got his number?
I have his Facebook information, yeah.
Well, I'll give you his number. I love Tank. Whenever he and Stro are together,
yeah.
They're a riot. They really are.
Yeah,
I'm sorry,
we
Todd. I'm
sure.
excited about Tank.
He got me pretty good. He gave me a solid chop. If I take deep breaths to this day, I might still feel it.
that sounds like L.A. Tank. Oh, yeah, he's hilarious. We've done stuff where he was in the heel mode, stuff like that, and I go up, I'd be yelling at him. But the whole thing, because a lot of people can't make out what's being said. I was always, you know, telling him to tell his father thanks for serving and, you know, that kind of stuff, you know. So I'm yelling greetings
yeah.
at him. It just, you know, that's just awesome, the fact that guy could be, you know, to have met him and know him a little bit like that. Yeah, that's awesome. There are some guys on the East Coast that are a blast, man. Absolute blast. I hope you get to meet some of those guys and have half the fun with them that I've had from the outside.
Absolutely. I want to wrestle them all. So anyone and everyone, I want to try that. Like I said, a lot of the East Coast guys, I've at least had the pleasure of meeting, if not being involved in some kind of match with. But again, I'm going on 3 years in, so I knock on wood, you know, God willing, I, you know, maintain my health and am able to keep doing this for 30, 40 years if I can, 50 if not even, you know. So
right.
I have a lot of time to run into those guys, and hopefully soon I'm able to get in the ring with as many of them as I can, because especially after everything going on with the pandemic, I'm just itching to get back in the ring. If I could, I'd wrestle 7 days a week.
Chaz Moretti was saying about how after the pandemic, ready to rock and roll, man.
Yeah. I think you're going to see two things. You're going to see a lot of people who are just so pent up that they're going to go absolutely ballistic in the ring. You know, they're going to do the best thing they've done in years, you know, like just like a revitalized motivation. And then I think you're going to have some guys who maybe didn't do as much during quarantine as they should have. I'm hoping I'm more on the other end of the spectrum, the first part I said, but it's a different kind of conditioning once you get in that ring. And once, you know, kind of, it's kind of like riding a bike, you know, after all this time, you know, we've had to be away from wrestling, you know, obviously we'll get right back into it, but I feel like some people are going to have to be like, whoa, it's been a while. Give me a second. I'm not running to the ring right now. I'm taking my time.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
And Dave Atwell, you love wrestling, don't you?
Oh, yeah. You know, Mr. Wrestling 2 passed away today.
Oh, yeah,
I did see that. And that is incredibly sad news.
Yeah. He was one of the first guys that I ever saw live. And, you know, I enjoy the ladder matches and the high flying stuff and all that, but I still miss the good old days when those guys would get in there and slap arm bars and abdominal stretches. And one of my favorites was the front chancery, because when you break out of it, you had to yell no chancery. But those were the good old days when they were in there. And the truth be told, that was always how I kind of drew the line between the then WWF and the WCW, or the NWA going to WCW, is that the NWA side always seemed to be a little more about wrestling, whereas WWF was more about showmanship. And I think, I think that's where I kind of gravitated towards the NWA. And, of course, Ric Flair, he's the man. You know, you got to follow him where you go. But, yeah, it was sad to hear about Mr. Wrestling. It was sad news, because he was always – he had that knee lift, and he'd do a spinning toe hold every now and then, and then he challenged Flair with the figure four, and he started going on that. But, yeah, sad news to hear about that. He was always good entertainment. So, but again, as much as I hate like crazy to say this, anybody who was doing something when I was a kid is probably getting long in the tooth now, because, you know, I just hit the big 5-0, so, you know, you can do the math if you want. But, yeah, it was sad to hear.
Yeah.
Seven?
You know.
Dave, is, is that the number?
Yeah, I ain't that far gone yet.
That was a joke. You can laugh about it now. Thank you.
I wanted to ask something.
Ask, Steve.
We were talking about Mr. Wrestling 2's moveset. Randy, can you describe some of your moveset or signature moves to anybody that's not familiar?
Absolutely. I would say one of my bigger finishing moves. Basically, I'm about 5'9", 5'10", depending on if you look at my driver's license or not and want to check me on that. About 185 pounds. I'm not the biggest guy out there. I'd be considered cruiserweight to most people. So I kind of have to use my size to my advantage and kind of be a little more agile and try and be a little more technical, especially with my folk style Greco-Roman background. My finisher that usually I hope will knock someone right the heck out is a springboard enziguri, so which to fans who probably watch AEW, Cody Rhodes currently does it himself. I kind of do a little different. It's similar, but I try to make it my own. Basically, I run off the middle rope, springboard off the middle rope, and kind of use my momentum to swing back and kick my opponent in the head. And usually, it does a pretty good job of knocking them out. So that one's done me well in the past. You actually mentioned the front chancery, and with my technical folk style wrestling background, I try and do some things like that. And I'll always remember that in high school that we had to do neck bridges almost every practice, where we just bridge on our necks. My hands would be off of the mat, and my neck and feet were the only thing touching the mat. So I actually use that to my advantage now, especially in a move, like you said, the front chancery. You know, I'll try and lock that in, and bridging over actually elevates the hold and kind of traps them in a little bit harder, so it makes it harder to escape. So I try and use that as well. And then I'm just kind of a smash mouth kind of guy, you know, just punching and kicking people right in the mouth. Try and use a little bit, like I said, of my folk style background. Try and do some, you know, a Northern Lights suplex is one of my favorite go-to moves, you know, because most time people aren't expecting me to hit that. Which that's why I hope 9 times out of 10, you know, I kind of catch them. You know, that's the whole point. You know, you don't want to telegraph your moves in any sport. You know, baseball, you don't want to tip your pitches. Football, you don't want to be something to see your plays. So I like kind of being explosive and kind of, like I said, with that Northern Lights suplex. You know, it's just like they think they have me, and then I flip them over. And, again, I use that neck bridge because, again, it elevates the leverage on the suplex, and I'm able to pin them afterwards. Sometimes successfully. So those are a couple of some of my more favorite moves. I do like going to the top rope and drop kicking people too. That's one of my favorites. I do some springboard stuff as well. But yeah, I like to try and be just diverse as well and very versatile. I like to do different things, you know, so and you always have to have a consistent base because you have to, you know, be good at it. You know, you have to have moves that you're good at, but also like, you know, pulling things out of the bag that people are like, holy cow, didn't know he could do that. You know, I'm going to surprise people when I can.
Well, that's cool. Now, who are some of your favorite old school wrestlers and new school wrestlers? That'll tell us more about you than anything.
How about this? You had mentioned your age. I'll mention my age. I'm 26 years old. So when you say old school, to me, I'm going to say like, in my lifetime, in the 90s, going into early 2000s, I was a Eddie Guerrero fan, huge on Owen Hart. I was a big fan of the Underdogs, especially because I was a kid. I mean, I was a tiny kid. I hit my growth spurts pretty late. So I looked up to guys like that kind of were just, hey, I don't care how small I am, I'm going to be in your face and, you know, and not back down. And guys like that, like Eddie, Owen Hart, Rob Van Dam was a big one for me. Chris Jericho, Shawn Michaels, guys like that are huge influences to me. And I mean, I could make a list. You know, that top five or top three. You know, people ask me if you had a Mount Rushmore, what would it be? And that kind of has layers to it. To me personally, Eddie Guerrero, Shawn Michaels, Chris Jericho, RVD would kind of be right up there for me, but in the realm of, you know, who would actually be the best, I would have to probably throw in Ric Flair, Undertaker, Austin, and Rock. And I'm still leaving out guys like Randy Savage, Hogan, Ricky Steamboat. If you were to ask me,
and
old school guys, those are guys that influence me.
And hold on,
Savage.
You left out Roddy Piper.
I was getting there. I was actually literally about to say him. Yeah, it's crazy because
I was thinking about him, too.
Yeah, especially, having red hair and I get that comparison all the time. And which is fine. Absolutely fine. You know, it's a humbling thing, an awesome person to be compared to. And, you know, I've got a lot of guys who just by my looks, you know. They could depend on my skill. That would be way, way better. But, hey, I'll take it. But, no, I would absolutely never leave Rowdy Roddy Piper out. Absolutely.
Now,
not.
Now I heard you mention Owen, but not Brett. So I'm curious on
again,
that.
It's
just,
so tough. You know, I don't want to leave anybody out, but I could mean to.
Oh, no,
right
no.
There,
I get it.
Owen had the charisma.
It wasn't on purpose, but what made you dig Owen?
again, that kind of that underdog mentality, you know, a couple times he was kind of the odd man out and still stood his ground. And unfortunately, I think, I mean, he was nearing his peak, but I don't think he was there yet. I don't think we saw the best of Owen Hart. You know, unfortunately, you know, if things would have went differently, I think he would have been just as big as Bret, if not bigger. And I love Bret Hart. I'm not knocking him at all. But I definitely think that with, you know, the tragedy that happened with him, that we missed out on a lot of, you know, future possibilities of how great he would have been, even more great or greater than he was.
Could you imagine some of the matches he would have had if you know, if he was still around for the Radicals to come in, Benoit, Guerrero, Malenko, Saturn?
Yeah, well, you know, I think he might have seen him jump on board with them. And that would have been truly unstoppable.
Yeah, I kid you.
I found a new respect for Owen. I always liked him when he wrestled, but after his death and I started finding out more about his personal side and everything, my level of respect for the guy just went through the roof because he never let the business – I mean, you see guys like Hogan that still to this day are just like cartoons, even in their personal lives.
Right.
I was watching a special about his that big court case he had with the porn tape and all that jazz. And day, the guy wore a black shirt, black slacks, black blazer, and a black do-rag to the courtroom every day. And he said, and I'm one of these guys, you got to remove your cover when you go in the courtroom. And you're not in there for looks. You're in there to adjudicate. And and he, you know, every day would go in there, and he's got the do-rag on and all that. And to a certain extent, I'm surprised the judge didn't say, take that thing off in my courtroom. Nevertheless, you know, you see his personal life, and he's just a dumpster fire as a person, you know, on a, I don't know, a personal level. But, I mean, the poor guy, I mean, he's got, you know, all this stuff going on. But yet he's still in that thing where he can't walk into a courtroom with a tan suit and a blue tie and no hat on. You know what I mean? He's still, everywhere he goes, he's that character. And Owen never fell in with that. And when I heard the story, and I don't know, I'm sure you guys have heard the story about the night that he passed, he was running late to the arena. And he grabbed his bags, ran out the door, and ran past his wife. And he was like, oh, I'm running late. Choo! Outdoor he went, got in the car. And she said he came back in and said, I'm sorry, kissed her goodbye, and says, I'll see you tonight, jumped in his car and sped off. And, you hear a story like that, and, man, I tell you, if that doesn't break you down, then quite possibly you don't need to have a spouse.
No.
And that's it just shows the kind of guy he was, you know?
Yeah, I think he was with a fan that was – I think he was with a fan that was driving him. And this may have been talked about in Martha's book, but, like, there was a lot of interesting context that doesn't get talked about in the Dark Side of the Ring episode that, you know, Vince called Owen and basically told him to come to the arena to rehearse the move and or else he was going to lose his job. It's just a horrible situation.
And he didn't want to do it, you know. And it just all of us have been in that situation at the workplace where something came up that you didn't feel good about, but you also knew the mortgage was due at the end of the week. And, you know, it just – because I'm here to tell you, I'm not real big on heights. If you've ever been around me, with me being deaf in one ear, the higher I go, the more dizzy I get. And so I'm not a real big fan of the height scene. But that guy, even with Sting used to do, they have to climb way the hell up in those rafters, put on one of those harnesses. The safest place is with your feet flat on the ground. So I don't care how many harnesses and fail safes they got. Until my feet are planted, I ain't safe. And for those guys that have the sack just to go up there and do that to start with, because I looked at Vince and said, okay, fly from the ceiling of the arena, I'll be a ref from here on out. I'll set the ring up, no sweat. Hell, I'll sell damn Gatorade. I'm not doing it. And just sad, you know, to hear, because a lot of these wrestlers out here, and like I said, not to drop names, but, you know, you hear these wrestlers been married, you know, 4 and 5 and 6 times and that kind of stuff, and, you know, drug problems and all this kind of jazz. And Owen went home to his wife and kids every night. And,
right.
Some
guys have more wives than they've had championships.
Yeah. And as a regular guy, you appreciate Blair. That. You know, he didn't let the fame eat him alive, you know?
Right. And that's a part of the reason, you know, he's an influence. Because, I mean, I've always prided myself on, you know, kind of remaining humble, because you're never at the top. I mean, you can get to the top, but there's always going to be someone coming after you, and there's always going to be someone, you know, to challenge you. And,
yeah.
I mean, that's kind of basically my mentality that I had from wrestling in high school, that, you know, don't get complacent. You know, I focus on the match that I just had is when I lose the match in front of me. So, I kind of try to actually keep that mentality with professional wrestling, keep going forward. Now, of course, I can always look back and say, hey, this was an awesome, you know, time and everything else. But, it's just all about keeping your head up and, you know, eyes focused on being in front of you and that remaining humble, because who's there to brag to? I mean, if you're that good,
yeah.
Your work speaks for yourself. And that's kind of what I hope and aspire to have my career showcase. You know, if I'm really as good as I want to be and can be or hope to be, I want that to show for itself. I don't need to tell you how good I am. Now, unless, you know, you piss me off, I'm going to tell you how good I am, you know. My mood. You know, but either way, 9 times out of 10, I would rather my work be speaking for me.
Exactly.
And a guy like Owen epitomizes that.
Yeah, you were the way you were talking, I've got a good question that I want to ask you. Where do you want to go? How far do you want to go in 5 to 10 years? Because 5 to 10 years is going to be probably your prime. As it's tough in that ring, isn't it?
Yeah. That isn't a hard question to necessarily answer. It's just, without saying everywhere, you know, I want to wrestle everywhere. I want to go to Japan, Canada, Mexico. Obviously, I want to go to the best places I can go. And I've said it before that I'm kind of like, I want to taste all the flavors. You know, I want to see what things are like in different companies, where I fit in. You know, where I work the best. And at a time, you know, if I'm not a good fit for WWE, hopefully I'm a fit for somewhere else. New Japan, AEW, Ring of Honor, and vice versa. If I'm not maybe necessarily a good fit for New Japan, hopefully I can be a good fit for WWE. 5 to 10 years, I mean, we're talking anything can happen. Hope, and all I can do is hope and keep doing what I'm doing and keep trying to get better. And, yeah, I mean, like I said, I want to go everywhere. Eventually, yeah, like I would in 5 to 10 years, I would like to be somewhere consistently, under a contract, where it's, I know where I'm going to be at this weekend, XYZ, and be able to wrestle. Again, like I said earlier, if I could wrestle 7 days a week, I would, twice on Sunday. You know, if I can get somewhere that can provide that, then I absolutely will. So, yeah, so I guess you could say WWE, AEW, Impact, Ring of Honor, all of them. I want to go everywhere. So,
I think you mentioned PWG and MOW on another show. Is that still a goal as well?
Oh, absolutely. Again, anywhere and everywhere. And those companies are big, absolutely, as well. And Evolve is on that list as well. I mean, literally, I could list close to 50, if not more, companies that I want to work for in the next 5 to 10 years. And again, like, it's just about opportunity and what I can make happen, or what, you know, what opportunity I can be fortunate enough to receive. But obviously, I would say the dream is to be somewhere like WWE that has that mainstream, beyond TV, maybe beyond commercials. Maybe be on an ice cream bar. That would be pretty cool, right?
That's not too shabby. Now, let me ask you a question. There's some, you've seen a ton of people. Now, if you could catch anybody, not necessarily where they are now, but say when they were your age, you know, that kind of thing. It's a handful of cats you'd like to be in the ring with.
Ooh. Oh, man. Any era of Jericho would be insane. Jericho now, right, or Jericho 2000, YTJ, Jericho 95, any of those variations. I'll take any of them. Give me what I got. Give me what you can. I'll take any of those Jerichos. That's definitely one of the guys that would be, an insane thing to be in the ring with. Obviously, Eddie, if, he were still with us. RVD, and still wrestling to this day. So, hey, maybe the opportunity could present itself one day. And you talk about guys, like you said, I guess now or then, whenever. Dynamite Kid, I know he's kind of had, some things come to light in the past few years, people kind of changed their opinions on. But as far as a wrestler in the ring, incredible. I might not be too, I might not feel too good after that match. I might be in bed for a couple of days with ice all over my body, but it would be worth it.
Right.
And obviously,
yeah, there's a handful of cats that I would watch back in the day that were unreal.
Yeah, absolutely. Him and Tiger Mask had a match in Japan. I watched it today. It's like, this is
right
in the 80s. And it's like, this is stuff that people are doing now, but it's almost like it's, to a lot of people, this is new stuff, but these guys are doing it
still holds
30,
up.
40 years ago.
God, you didn't have to do the math, dude.
So sorry. Unfortunately, it's not my biggest strong suit. My math game is decent at best, but, there's a line I draw there.
I'd like to add some more questions. I wanted to get your thoughts on some of your opponents, like Alpha Jr., Ethan Cross, like some of the guys I've seen you or heard about you work with. And I wanted to know, what's the meaning behind your shirt, the Free Randy shirt that's been popular lately?
Well, to start with, talking about my opponents, Alpha Jr. was incredible. And I feel like I've actually been thinking about some things I've said about our match on a couple podcasts. And I guess on the spot, trying to formulate what you're trying to say, I didn't necessarily say it the best way. People have asked me what my worst match was. And that's not necessarily what that match was. It was actually a great match. It was a phenomenal match. I was just insanely disappointed in myself. And that's just kind of something that comes with the territory. You're always going to be your biggest critic. And in that match, absolutely, he did nothing wrong. And I did really nothing wrong. I just probably had two or three missteps in that match that, one, I could have, maybe gotten something big on him to get the win and get the upset. But at the other end of the spectrum, it was just kind of things that it was my first hometown match. And I just felt like I personally did not do I tried, but I feel like I didn't do as well as I should have or could have. So I feel like I kind of need to reiterate that. And I thank you for bringing that up, because again, it was an amazing opportunity. He was so cool. And, aside from the fact he beat the crap out of me, but it was an incredible opponent. Massive amounts of respect for him. Ethan Cross is another guy. Absolutely nothing but respect for him. Another guy from around our way in Virginia that has made a name for himself. He's been up and down the East Coast. And it was incredible to have that match too, because again, it brought a lot together for me. You know, it was like I missed out on that GXW opportunity, and you know, he was one of the guys that the GXW show, one of the few shows I went to before they closed, he was there, and you know, I basically followed him since, and a lot of those guys, and kind of seen where they've gone and how far they've come, and it's incredible, you know, to see myself, you know, standing across the ring from him. And I guess basically to get back towards the second part of your question, the free man thing, it's kind of a mental thing. You know, it's about not letting anyone hold you back. Not about, you know, kind of getting like complacent and getting like pigeonholed it, or kind of trapping your own self. You know, it's like, I don't want anyone to hold me down. I don't want anyone to stand in my way. So Free Randy is about freeing myself from my own prison kind of thing, getting myself out there and just fighting for myself and standing up for myself. And again, not letting anyone hold me down. So that's basically the mentality behind it. And if you asked a couple people and if you promised not to look up my record, I swear I didn't beat anybody up and go to jail for it. You know, please don't look that up. I'm just kidding. But yeah, it was that was mostly what it was about. It was just kind of like a mentality of just, like I said, not letting anyone hold you down and kind of staying true to yourself. So, and not letting someone tell you who to be either. You know, and I have friends of all walks of life. You know, I have very diverse friends and people and fans and people that I come into contact with. And that kind of goes towards that as well. Again, it's not even just about me. You know, it's just kind of like a mindset. Don't let anyone hold you down. Don't let anyone tell you who you are or what to be. So that was the idea behind that. And so I kind of have the anarchy symbol on there too.
So. Yeah, I get a Moxley vibe from the way you described that. So I'm glad to finally get some context on what that meant.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that, because right when he was released from WWE, I was actually like thinking of a way that I could showcase like how I felt, and it almost was exactly the video he posted right after he left WWE and revealed his Mox again. I was like, this is me. We were on the same page mentally here, but
right.
And again, it's about making it your own too, and obviously, I'm not trying to bite anyone's style, you know, and that's another thing. I'm trying to be unique. I'm trying to be me. As far as I'm concerned, forget the random you Google Randy Lawson, but I'm the Randy Lawson in professional wrestling, and I want to be unique. I want to be me. I don't want to be anybody else, and that's another aspect to that.
That's great. Trying to think. Yeah, I was going to ask, who are your favorite opponents so far? I asked you about a couple of them.
Well, I mean, those two are definitely on that list. I had a fun match with Jeffrey Bravo for the UCW Heavyweight Championship in October. That was a blast, because he pissed me off so bad throughout the entire match that when I finally got to knock him in the face, there's not much feeling better in the world than when I got to punch Jeffrey Bravo in the face. And if he's listening, hey, I'll do it again. Other than that, like I said, I've had a ton of opponents that have been incredible to work with. One of my personal favorite opponents is actually my tag team partner, Nick Anarchy. We've tagged a lot, but at other times we've been put at odds, and I've had to, step in the ring with him. He's been incredible to work with. Sledge Gibson, also another guy out of Virginia. I got to work with him in New York, of all places, not even close to home. And that was an incredible match, and a lot of respect was gained for him that day for me, which there was already a lot, but having that match with him was just another thing. To add, just another notch in the cap, as you could say, and absolutely impressive. And I could list, 100 more. My trainer, Nick Sicken Taylor, is also a awesome person to work with again because he trained me and he's my teacher. And so being able to get in the ring with him has taught me even more. So, yeah. I could list off 50 people. And not necessarily, this wasn't necessarily an opponent, but I did get to get in the ring and take the mic from the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase.
Oh, wow.
Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah, we were in right outside of Pittsburgh, and he and Virgil were in the ring, and they were thanking everybody for coming out to the ring, to the show that night, and I don't know what it was. Something made me mad that night, so I just had to come out to the ring, and it might have been something he said. It might have been something someone else said before him, but I had to come out to the ring and shut him up, and I took the mic from him, and I learned from that because he put me in the Million Dollar Dream pretty quick. He said, you can either give me your best shot or you're going to get mine, and I didn't give him my best shot. He gave me his. So that was definitely something to learn from.
Okay. There was something you mentioned earlier. And I'm trying to do this so I don't want you necessarily have to use names or anything. So you've worked with plenty of folks and stuff like that. Some folks, I suspect there's better symmetry, karma. You guys hit that vibe, that groove together better.
Chemistry.
And then there's some, I suspect, that no matter how many times you work together, you might not ever have it. So, and don't mention names because I don't want it to, if you don't have to. Have you ever, worked with, give us both a yin and a yang, if you will, for the positive, absolutely use a name, somebody you're just like, dude, it felt like we could do no wrong in the ring together. And then there would be somebody that just like, nothing. We just couldn't find that groove.
All right. Well, that's an awesome question. I guess we'll go from the bad to the good. We'll finish off with the good.
I like it.
I definitely have maybe had one or two matches, and there's two of us in the ring, so it's definitely never going to be all well. I could rephrase that, but I would like to think that there's not going to be a time where it's going to be just the other guy's fault and not my fault. There have definitely been times where just he and I just weren't kind of in the same mindset, I would say. And sometimes, in wrestling, you have to be on that same level of focus. There are some guys who could do it in their sleep, and then there are guys who think they could do it in their sleep. And unfortunately, sometimes that is the case, And it's in wrestling. Obviously, the point is to you're trying to beat your opponent, but I'm not out there to kill anyone. If I hurt someone badly enough in the ring, I'm pretty sure I can still get an assault charge. So I try not to let that happen. So then I really will have to have free Randy shirts. With that aspect, I would say it's been very few and far between. I could maybe think of one or two instances where we didn't click, and it was more so I knew it, maybe he knew it, but I think the people watching us wouldn't know that. So, I think I've been fortunate enough to have been in the ring with, everyone I've wrestled has been just utterly professional and great at what they do. So, I've just been very fortunate to have that that luck, or that, I guess you could call that luck. But just, again, fortunate of having just great opponents. But to kind of piggyback off of that and go into the good, the 50 guys I could name that I've had fun in the ring with, even though I'm getting punched in the mouth, but two guys that I've wrestled recently that I could throw out there. And Sludge Gibson's one of them, too. I'll throw him in there as well. But K.A. Robinson and the director, Christopher Andino, are two guys that I've been in the ring with, and it's like cutting through butter. It's just the smoothest thing. It's just they both have just the right mindset. And right now, K.A. and I, I've known him for a little while. We've had our differences, I beat him for the United States Championship in West Virginia at FCWA. And, I think he might be a little salty about that still, but that's fine. But in that match, I mean, it was a triple threat match. It was me versus K.A. Robinson versus P.J. Parker. And P.J. Parker is a big man, and K.A. is a little bit smaller than me. So the dynamic was, I mean, I had to be on my toes. You know, I had to be worried about a giant beating my butt. I'm trying to not curse, but kicking my butt. And then you had K.A., who's smaller than me, also really about to kick my butt. So I had to kind of play both sides of the fence there, and the dynamic actually worked in my favor. Obviously, I walked out with the championship. So that match was incredible. And I had a match. It was Fatal 4-Way. And again, it was my partner, Nick Anarchy. And at that time, we were at odds. Chris Randino, the director, and Eric Jackson in a Fatal 4-Way match. And again, it was just I came up on the short end of the stick there. Again, with a Fatal 4-Way match, you know, sometimes that's just you know, you're just unfortunate to be the guy who gets stuck in the middle of traffic and gets hit head on from two different semi trucks, basically. But Andino in that match, I mean, just absolutely impressed me. And he is continuing to do some awesome things right now on the East Coast too. So those are definitely some guys that I just feel like I've had some of the most fun with. And a guy that one last guy I'll throw in here, and I don't want to groan when I say it. He and I have we're friends, absolutely good friends. I've ridden with him to shows before. We've tagged together and we've fought together, fought against each other. But he has his moments where I really want to beat the crap out of him, whether there's a ring or not, and that's John Glaston. And he and I, like I said, we've had our moments where we are at the end together, and then we've had our moments where I'm beating the crap out of him. But I got to give that guy a little bit of credit. I feel bad saying that. I give him a lot of credit, but we have that kind of relationship where he's not even here and I'm trash talking him. So, but great dude. You know, he's a good guy. And we've, like I said, we've had a good amount of chemistry in the ring. So, but again, I don't know how much time we have left. I could talk about the rest of the show, how many guys I've had.
Well, we got 33 minutes left. Hey, you keep talking for 32 minutes and 54 seconds.
Yeah. Well, some good questions. From that one, because, again,
Randy, Randy, this is Dr. John. I'll let you know when we got to go and the British lady wants to start singing. So don't you worry about that. You keep talking. I got to tell you something great about Randy. This is the coolest thing in the world, because whenever I talk to somebody new, I always make it a point to let them know what I'm interested in, which is Lizardman, Bigfoot, UFOs, and the paranormal. And guess what the reception was I got from Randy? The rest of the time we talked about the paranormal. It was awesome.
Oh, that's rather cool. Ooh, we got another thing that we can go on.
Dave,
oh,
you're in
awesome.
Trouble now.
No, that's cool, Randy, because here's something that some people may not have caught in what you talked about. You talked about working with people. The chemistry was rocking, great matches. So maybe not win-wise, you could walk away from it happy, but you could come back from that and be like, if I saw a film of it, I'd be like, oh, God, that, you know, that really was as good as I felt. But you mentioned win, lose, draw. So that's what made my mind some of the references that you just used for some of those rather positive matches, high chemistry matches. I think that's thinking great, because you're talking about stuff, you know, it's not, you didn't use stuff that you just won every time.
Oh, yeah, I think actually, other than the one with the title, yeah, the other matches I lost, both of them. So, and that's also a part of it, too. I mean, obviously, you can't win them all. I mean, there are guys who did win a lot for a long time. I mean, I'm on a little bit of a win streak before the pandemic, but going into 3 or 4 matches. But, that's part of what it's about. And then the other part is just making an impression. And I mean, you've seen guys like, actually most, recently, our time right now, Drake Maverick. And you saw that reception, that impression he gave, and I don't want to take anything away, from Phantasma, but obviously all eyes were on Drake Maverick and on NXT this past week and what, you know, what was going to happen, if he was going to win the title or not, was he going to keep his job? And, I mean, I'm obviously invested in wrestling. I continue to do it, and I love doing it. But something about that, like, clicked with me internally, and, I mean, it's been a while since something, like, really pulled at me like that. And I was really on pins and needles the entire match. I mean, there are matches that just naturally I'll watch and be, you know, completely enamored with. But just more so than the match, it kind of transcended that. And with him, you know, having that match and he lost, but the payoff of him getting that contract, it didn't matter that he lost. The impression was already made, you know, and however thousands of fans he made from that one moment, I mean, that's invaluable to me, and that's something that I strive for. Even, again, it's making the best out of a worse situation with wrestling. Again, you want to win them all, but you're not going to win them all. And even when I'm not going to win, I want to make the most of that. And that was, again, completely, like, a revitalizing feeling. Even though, like, it's more so that I haven't been in the ring since the quarantine started. But seeing that just kind of revitalized my motivation because, again, that's a guy who I think, on paper, I'm bigger than him, but I've never met him personally, or right. You know, so I don't know exactly if I am that much bigger than him. But again, it's someone at least similar stature of myself, and you know, it's kind of someone I look up to and see a little bit of myself in. You know, I relate a lot to him, and just kind of that impression from that one match alone, you know, is something. Like I said, wins and losses out the window. What he did in that ring, I forgot. And again, nothing to not take anything away from Stasma, who's awesome. I mean, incredible. You know, he's been doing it forever and doing it extremely well. And again, not taking anything away from his victory and winning the Cruiserweight Championship, but that focus on Drake Maverick, that moment, is, I think, something that wrestling is built on.
I'd like to I'd like to add to that. Yeah, Drake Maverick is definitely I'm glad he's getting this recent support, getting this, you know, attention, this positive attention lately, and getting his job back in storyline, and I've met his wife Renee at GXW, and she was pretty fun to watch and pretty nice to meet. So definitely happy for Drake to get these opportunities with WWE, and I'd like to add that, you know, that kind of, we were saying earlier about how Drake lost, but he still was able to get, you know, some positive attention from it. It kind of reminded me of Cedric Alexander versus Kota Ibushi from the Cruiserweight Classic, because Cedric lost that match, but the fans are still behind him, and Triple H, you know, gave him, you know, his approval after the match. It kind of reminded me of that moment, what you were just talking about.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, because that's actually probably – that match is in my top 10 of the past 10 years of wrestling. I mean, just again, and it was basically – it was an incredible match. And like you said, that feeling in the end, he didn't win. But having Triple H come out there and shake his hand, and he basically – hey, he's staying, you know. That impact of that is definitely vital to wrestling. And like I said, it's like moments like that that kind of gets people to fall in love with wrestling.
And another match that made me fall in love with wrestling was Nakamura versus Ibushi at Wrestle Kingdom 9. This is like when I was really getting into New Japan from the Ring of Honor partnership, and Ibushi lost the match, but he still, you know, was impressed everybody, even in defeat. So it's interesting that you mentioned that earlier.
Yeah. And like I said, that's just, again, like, everybody has their moments, like, whether it be Rock Austin at WrestleMania 17 or Steamboat and Randy for the Intercontinental title. You know, everyone has those matches that they can say, hey, that's what got me into wrestling. And actually, I know this necessarily wasn't even the question, but kind of on that topic, I have a match that I was already into wrestling, but at that age, it was kind of one of those things where my parents would catch me watch wrestling and take the cable box, or, you know, take the actual whole TV out of my room. And you know, I remember like bits and pieces of segments because like I would only be able to watch 10 minutes before I got caught. You know, like I think Big Show Kurt Angle off the top of a semi truck one time, and my mom came in right during that and said, "No, no, no, absolutely not." Took my TV and one of the first times that I was able to kind of like freely watch it without my parents really stopping me was SummerSlam 04. And dare I say his name, kind of like Harry Potter. It's like He Who Shall Not Be Named versus Randy Orton. I will say it. I mean, I'll say it.
It's been long. Yeah.
There's no harm in saying his name. But that
we're fans of his work.
With him and Randy Orton for the World Heavyweight title at SummerSlam. I mean, that was a match that got me just – that was it. I was hooked. And at that point, I didn't care if my parents tried to take my TV. I was going to fight tooth and nail to keep it. I probably got punished for that a few times, but that was like what hooked me. And it might not be what, you know, everyone has, like I said, everyone has their match. And that was the one that, like, again, I was already into wrestling. You know, I'd seen matches, you know, Rock, Austin, and things like that at a younger age. But that match with Benoit Orton was just incredible to me again, because Orton at the time was the youngest world heavyweight champion. I would have been an 04. I mean, I would have been maybe 11. I hate to say that. I would have been 11 years old. So he wasn't that much older.
I'm a younger fan too.
All right. I'm now, Randy, I got an important question to ask you. This is Dr. John. What do your parents think about what you're doing now? And are they fans of yours?
They're definitely fans of mine. I think it's one of those things that no matter how many times I assure them that I'm going to be okay, they're still worried, you know, that, you know, someone could slam me.
But what are your parents, you know, if they weren't say they were going to be worried?
What's that?
You know?
Then I would be worried if they weren't worried. So, So, I mean, in a way, that I know. I mean, they've always expressed their support. Again, they might have expressed some doubt at times. And I think that over the past two or three years, I've really kind of got them back, you know, on my side as far as, you know, my mom was actually at the Alpha match, and I think that might not have been the best match for her to come to. That was the first match she ever saw me. Of course, after, she's like, I really don't know why you choose to do this. That, how can that be fun? I was like, Mom, that was an absolute blast. Are you kidding me? As I have a chest, like a handprint that literally covers my entire chest. Off of hand, the thumb started right underneath my nipple on my right side, and the middle finger went over my shoulder. I mean, his handprint just completely engulfed my chest. And my mom was like, why do you do that? That can't be fun. I was like, Mom, I've never had more fun in my life. This is exactly what I want to do. So I think she respects that.
You know what?
My dad's the same way. I think he – oh, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say that is the difference between girls and boys, and therefore you cannot say – you know I'm going to get her name in. You can't say that the fabulous Moolah was exactly a girl.
Okay.
She was meaner than any man in the world.
I don't think I've ever heard anyone say otherwise. I mean,
I just love Moolah. She's the best. What?
What was her? How long did she have the title for? How many years did she have it?
Professor, what's the number? Well, and then she re-won it at 72 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm looking at that. Yeah. I was asked this trivia question before, but I'm looking it up right now.
She had it
forever. And this is—I don't want to sound nonsense.
That's the answer.
I want—I can't.
28 years.
It was her or Mae Young. One of the two had the title for, I want to say, 26 years. Does that sound right?
I think it's 28. Moolah had the NWA World Women's Championship in 1956, and was the most prominent holder for 28 years, is what I read.
There we go. That was close.
They
would have probably given me the belt.
But then when she re-won in the late 90s, I mean, she was,
I think
that was phenomenal.
Well, she had a stranglehold on women's wrestling, and the division back then, obviously the women back then were very tough, but the division isn't as diverse as it is now, I think, in today's women's wrestling.
Yeah,
they've got those girls, Charlotte Flair and all of those, have Moolah to thank for keeping women's wrestling alive so that they could take it to new heights. And I don't think anybody will. Professor Wrestling, you won't disagree with that, will you? You can, but it's hard to.
I just don't want to argue. No, I mean, no, you have a point. Her and Moolah were definitely trailblazers, and I think there's very mixed emotions about Moolah, but yeah, she definitely can be recognized for her contributions, for sure.
Right, and that being said, I don't want to open this can of worms because, I mean, we would have to come back tomorrow to finish the conversation. But
no.
I mean, there's definitely like some dark aspects that they've come to light from Mulan. I don't want to say anything, you know, because I can't confirm it. I wasn't there. But you know, there are definitely some dark things that apparently have come out that have been documented that, you know, maybe she did to get to the top, you know, and people she crossed on the way up. But it's to play devil's advocate for that. I mean, we would almost basically say, are you separating the person from their body of work? And if you do that, then I mean, you basically would have to do the same thing for Benoit. I mean, acknowledging their body of work and not acknowledging the person they were outside of the room. Does that fall in? It depends on who you asked, and that's a tough line to toe there.
Yeah, when it comes down to Benoit, I get a little itchy in the shorts over it because I'll be honest with you, and not to get into the political realm at all, not that I ever do anything like that, of course. Stalin had a falling out with Trotsky, and he went back to all these photos and had Trotsky blotted out of the photos. Okay? And it was Stalin. He was a communist dictator. Good call. So we got Benoit, who I still think there's more to that Benoit story than what has been put out there.
More than we'll ever know, though, unfortunately.
Yeah, and it took my dear to get the real Bruiser Brody story out there and all the monkey business that went behind the scenes. Because, like, Tony Atlas, I mean, hearing Tony Atlas tell that story about Bruiser Brody, it just put a totally different spin on there. You know?
I think absolutely there's more to that story.
Yeah. And so to erase Benoit's accomplishment, to erase his name, to erase his memory, to me is a disservice to, A, all the good that he did, and B, to the lesson it taught us. And that's where a lot of this stuff, and the Moolah thing, for crying out loud, you know, I good Lord, the stuff about prostituting the women wrestlers and telling her, hey, the only way you're going to make it is by humping that guy over there. You know,
for me, she was a big lesbian. We know that.
All those kind of things, though, if we don't constantly keep those lessons fresh, right, we're just going to have them happen again. So,
yeah, absolutely. History repeats itself, and, I mean, that goes across the board, and without getting into any other topics, I mean, history can repeat itself, and exactly you learn from that.
That wants to start roiding up or anything like that. Because let's face it, a lot of those guys there in the late 90s, early 2000s, suddenly got big. Well, Guerrero,
yeah.
We remember Hercules Hernandez. Hercules Hernandez, he went out for a couple of years. When he came back, he was unrecognizable. It looked like he had chemo. He was so swollen up. And,
right.
You know, and the next thing you know, he's dead. And if we erase the memory of Benoit and the unfortunate... It's there's an unfortunate side to that story as much as it is Owen's story. Hey, maybe we don't even have these guys dropping from the rafters, you know, so the next time you go to shoot up, you're going to think about the Benoit story and go, you know what, maybe I don't need to be doing this.
You know, I'd like to add something that they've also. It's not just Benoit that's kind of been ignored or kept hidden. Nancy Benoit, Nancy has been kind of forgotten, unfortunately, until the recent Dark Side of the Ring episode that was put out. Thankfully, she's gotten more attention since then.
But, Barry Bonds, I'm a huge, huge Braves fan. And when Barry Bonds asked to be one of the greatest ball players in the world, Hank Aaron is definitely one of my favorite ball players.
Hey, you're really going to not like me when I say I'm a Mets fan.
Say what, we're getting a lot of wind sound from somebody.
Yeah, that might be me.
Okay.
Let me
checking.
Yeah, please, that's not the first time Dave's been breaking wind on the air.
All right, now where were we? We had a great comedy moment. Now, where were we?
But when Bonds eclipsed Hank Aaron. All right, and people said, he cheated, you can't put him in the hall, blah, blah, blah. There's a term I like to use called society's bitch. And what's society's bitch? That's when Barry Bonds' bust is in the hall, and I walk right on by it.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? So it doesn't discredit what he did. He still gets credit for the amount of home runs he hits. But does he get do I tell my grandson about Barry Bonds? No, I walk right by him and I tell him about Hank Aaron.
Absolutely. And that's one reason that if you go to Cooperstown, there's two separate halls. There's the Hall of Fame for players, and then there's the Hall of Fame for records. Now, you cannot take away the fact that he physically hit those home runs. So that's going to always be in the – until someone – if someone ever can, beat that feat, which, it's hard to see someone doing that. A guy maybe like if Mike Trout heats up and plays for another 15, well, maybe not 15 years, but something like that, next 10 to 12 years, maybe someone like Mike Trout could get up there, but it's something that it's going to be hard to pass. You see that record in the Hall of Fame. Like you said, you can walk right by it. And that's the thing. Cooperstown has two separate Hall of Fames. You have the people, the players, and then you have the records. That's fine and dandy of him being in the records portion, but like you said, if he's in the players, you don't have to acknowledge it.
If I choose to look at Benoit and go, I think about all those wonderful matches he had. I think about him being the Wolverine. I think about him being a poster child for all of us 5'7" guys. It's not right for Vince to totally whitewash his name from – because I got to tell you, murdering your wife and kids, not a good thing. But there are wrestlers out there that are live right now that are doing just as scuzzy a damn – you know what I mean? And I don't know. To me, it's just one of those things that how are we ever going to prevent – the Benoit story from happening again if we don't keep it out there to learn from. And
well, Vice has done that recently.
Oh, really?
Dark Side of the Ring. Yeah, there was a series on some of the darker stories about wrestling, and Vice produced a show called Dark Side of the Ring that kind of showcased the Benoit and Owen tragedies and other stories as well.
Yeah, I didn't see the Benoit one. I saw, I definitely saw the Brody one. And like I said, that whole story, when it's told by Tony Atlas, who was right there at Ground Zero, that story takes a whole different turn. And, what does Tony Atlas have to lie about? Tony Atlas has no dog in that fight. He has absolutely nothing to gain by telling the truth. And hearing that story, and all the mayhem at the hospital and how the hospital was, in on it. If that doesn't teach, people, if it doesn't teach promoters how to how to treat their help, if it doesn't teach other wrestlers or other people, for God's sake, you know, on other jobs and everything, you know, by covering it up and throwing sand over top of it, it's not the solve for it. So, yeah, when you're talking about the Moolah story and all that jazz, yeah, I mean, she did a lot of horrible things from what I understand. But it doesn't diminish the fact that the chick, you know, won that damn women's title a couple hundred times. And for everything that she did in the ring and for all the entertaining matches she put on, you know, you got to pull the good from the bad, you know?
Yeah.
Well, accomplishments are accomplishments, regardless of what you say.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of wrestlers that have dark sides to them, and yeah, it shouldn't diminish their accomplishments, depending on how people feel, I guess.
Yeah, and I would touch on that and basically say it's like, hey, you could really nitpick each and everybody and find something negative about them, and whatever it may be, you find out, hey, that guy, hey, he stole a bunch of stuff from gas stations when he was on the road, you know, whether he was broke and just did it to survive or whatever the reason may be, or hey, you know, that guy, you know, he cheats on his wife all the time, you know, or hey, that guy just drinks all the time and doesn't take anything seriously. You know, there's so many things, and it's your level of morality and your interpretation of is that bad enough to, you know, to bury that person or figuratively speaking, or, you know, to disown that person basically. And it's like, and that's a tough line to tell. I mean, obviously, I mean, I spoke up earlier when you were saying, you know, he murdered his wife and his kids. It's like, obviously there are worse things in the world than that, but I mean,
yeah,
that's insanely evil. You know, you can't think of much worse things, you know, that a person could do, especially to their family, obviously. So it's like, I hold that pretty up near the top of things. And again, I talk about that match, that Chris Benoit versus Randy Orton match. It really got me back into wrestling. At that time, Chris Benoit became my favorite. Chris Benoit was my number one guy for years. And he was still one of my number one guys when he died. And that personally for me, that was like a tough thing to kind of come to terms with. It's like, hey, I had my time. You know, I had my time where I enjoyed him. You know, and I can go back and watch matches, but I can't say with, you know, good conscience that I respect him. I respect what he did in the ring, but and especially after, you know, what the professor, you know, what Steve was saying about the dark side of the ring on Vice. Vice did an incredible job of kind of shining light on that. And actually, for me personally, again, being someone who, like, when he passed away, I remember I bawled. I cried my eyes out when they did that empty arena show with Vince McMahon in the ring, and then they had to come back the next night, and
that
they gave
first
that.
Day,
and
we
found out
he was going home. Yeah, I mean, because all we knew that he was dead, and it hit us all like a ton of bricks that night. I remember it myself, and I was like, "You gotta be shitting me!" Out of all the people,
I didn't want to believe Eddie's death when it happened, when I heard about it. I wanted to believe it was a work, you know. But Vice actually recently showed the aftermath of Eddie's death in the Vice and the Benoit episodes as well. So I'm glad, you know, they kind of got that covered too.
Yeah. It's just aggravating that we try to cover up Benoit's memory, but in the meantime, there's movies about Charles Manson that are being nominated for Oscars. You know what I mean? It's just,
absolutely. There's definitely a stigma of like glamorizing serial killers.
Hey, Randy, you better be careful. I got a show Monday night that does that. Murder 1, 2, 3. We talk about serial killers every night.
I'm not necessarily knocking that. I'm just saying it's basically in the same realm. You know,
you a hard time, man. Come on.
Hey, that's quite all right. But yeah, and it's I'm not an advocate for murder. So, but with that, it's like you said, like they do kind of they do movies about Charles Manson, and yeah, with Benoit, I mean he killed multiple people. I don't know if I'm not even trying to be funny by saying it. I don't know what number you have to reach to be classified a serial killer. I'm sure there is a number.
Three.
Hey, Dr. John. I was gonna say Dr. John might know that number.
That's right. It definitely It definitely changed. Manson. It definitely changed the wrestling business for sure. Because I'm sure they pay attention more to head trauma, mental illness, unprotected chair shots to the head, and all that that followed after.
Yeah.
Mental stability to start with. I mean, these guys were fighting 250, 270 nights a year, and that's not that's not counting the overnight flights, the delayed flights, and all that kind of jazz that cost you time. I mean, these guys were constantly, and if you put in all the factors, and let me go on and preface this, put the asterisks out there. I'm not saying Benoit was right. This is not what I'm getting at. But if you look at the grueling schedule, you look at getting tossed around the ring and hurting like hell every night after work. He had a son that had mental handicap. And, you know, all of that kind of stuff that comes into it, that guy had a lot. He had a lot on his plate. And
for sure.
Then he was amplifying the pain, so to speak, the mental pain, through the, you know, the steroids and everything.
Right.
And it was just you almost kind of see it's that friend that's leaving the party tore up, and everybody tried to stop him, and everybody, when he finally leaves and he gets all violent about it, and you say, okay, to hell with it, and you let him get in the car and drive off, and everybody just kind of looks at one another and does that, man, he ain't gonna make it home tonight. You find out next day he ain't there. It's that same thing where you wonder just how much one man can take. And, you know, to Vince's discredit, I'm not a real big Vince McMahon guy, because I think Vince has got a whole hell of a lot more skeletons in his closet and evil deeds than anybody else. But nevertheless.
He looks like a cemetery.
Yeah. You know,
hey, Jeff, we're on the edge of a hard stop.
Yeah,
we're about 2.5 minutes away.
Yeah,
we're right there.
Can we get Randy to plug his social media before the time runs up?
Yeah, I wanted to say, look, first of all, it's great having everyone here, but Randy, I want you to give us a goodbye here. Tell us about your social media. Tell us about what's coming up. We're going to do it a little different. You're going to get to say goodbye for all of us, and then we'll just say goodbye and call it a night. You got 1 minute. You got 90 seconds to tell us about your social media.
90 seconds. All right. Putting the pressure on. All right. I can do it. So basically
the
right
pressure's
now.
Pressure's on.
Okay. All right. My social media right now, I am at Facebook. If you look up Randy Lawson, you will see my beautiful face with my flowing red hair. And obviously that free Randy shirt that Steve was talking about earlier. And you can go ahead and hit that like on there, and I do my best to keep up with my schedule on there, which obviously is pretty low. But I'm also on Instagram at Randy Lawson Pro, where I also post some highlights, pictures, shows, and upcoming shows and flyers and things like that. I'm working on my YouTube page, so stay tuned for that. I will plug that on my other social media platforms in the next few weeks to come. Other than that, you can see me next at NCWA on August 6th, where I'll be defending my United States Championship against Prince Machiavelli, a guy out of Baltimore. And also, there's a tentative. Delaware is kind of, with the pandemic, you know, things are going on, you know, that are out of our control. So as of right now, it's kind of up in the air, but there is a tag team tournament in June, actually the end of June, called the Chapel Cup, in memorial of a wrestler named Eric Chapel, who passed away last year, who actually was at my first match, my debut match. And one of the guys to give me some really good advice, you know, kind of give me like that good like nudge, like, hey man, you got it. Like, don't worry, stop, you know, don't let it get in your head. Kind of helped me clear my head before my first match. So that's an incredible honor to be able to be a part of that. So that's where I'll be at. Again, if that's up in the air right now because of, you know, coronavirus and quarantine. But Yep. As of right now, my next booking is August 6th in West Virginia for SCWA.
Well, we hope it works, and we got 5 seconds, so we'll see you next week on the one and only Pop Culture Stars. Thank you, Randy Lawson. Thank you, Professor Wrestling Steve. See you later.
All right, good night. Steve, Randy, good to have you on, fellas.
Thank you guys for having me. It was a blast.